Yours, John? We have before us Committee Substitute for House Bill 336. It's to rectify what the colleagues were having with the bond market relative to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The bill was introduced on both the Senate and the House. The House bill is passed and it's now before us. We have today Michael Lynch, who is the director, executive director of AHFC, with us. If you could just come up and make a few comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Michael Lynch, Executive Director of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Last year in April, the Supreme Court of the State of Alaska handed down what is known as the Alex decision, which raised questions that have been unanswered, but they are questions about the handling of funds by Alaska Housing. Since its inception in 1971, Alaska Housing has been collecting fees on its loans and using these fees to in its operation. Principally, they've been used to create a general fund which has provided both a measure of safety to bondholders who look upon it as a reserve should the bond collateral be inadequate, and it has been looked upon by the rating agencies as a means of self-insuring the earthquake risk on some of our early bonds. Additionally, over the years, the state has appropriated to Alaska Housing for purposes of supplementing mortgages, loans, and cash. The loans, until turned into cash, have accrued income, both and principal, and the cash has been held and invested short-term until it was used. In all these cases, these funds have been used and considered in the budget request each year in order to reduce the appropriation request by Alaska Housing. What we're asking in this bill is that the Senate Finance Committee affirm that these actions were in line with what Alaska Housing was expected to be doing.
Any questions? Senator?
We're on House Bill 336.
Yes.
There's a broader language in the House bill compared to the Senate bill. You know who put that in? Was that the governor that put that in?
Senator, a bill was prepared for both houses, and inadvertently the Senate received a draft rather than the final bill. The bill that the Senate originally received was a draft before the final form was created. It was an error on the part of a member of the governor's office.
Could you explain what the first line in that bill would allow you to do?
You're talking about Section 1, Senator?
Yes.
It would allow us to retain the interest that is earned on mortgages we now hold and the principal payments we receive, and to use those in what is known as our SAM fund, which are the funds we use to provide the supplement in order to sell bonds and give the mortgage holders a rate of 10% or 9% if they're veterans.
How much money are we talking about?
Senator, I believe we supplied the committee with a sheet. Through the 31st of December, all of the money in question totals $168 million. Through June 30th, there would be another $31 million accumulated. Through June 30th, 1984, there would be an additional $40. If you add them all together, it comes out to approximately $240 million.
Senator Joseph?
Mike, let me ask this. Does this mean that the program would go forward without on its own momentum, that is to say, the size of the program, the amount of loans in the program would be beyond the control of political authority directly, but would be up to the board of the AHFC and the market and the demand?
No, Senator, it does not mean that. This would mean that these funds would be retained from now through June and would, I guess, be a permanent appropriation But Alaska Housing is not self-sustaining, will not be for a number of years. And in addition, these funds will continue, this type of funds will continue to accrue each year, and we will have to come back to the Senate and the House each year and ask for an appropriation to retain them. This will not put Alaska Housing out of control or out of your reach.
Excuse me for interrupting, but could you explain that in more detail? What we're doing is that we're allowing you to use the interest and the loan repayments without limitation, mortgage loan commitment fees, for use in reloaning, correct?
Yes, sir. We have been earning these
for what period of time?
We have been earning these interest, this interest income and the principal payments since late 79, early 1980. We've been earning the fees, the loan fees, since 1971. And we have been rolling these into mortgage loans each year. And because we've received the interest in, well, the principal payments we had, but particularly the interest, we have been able to reduce the appropriation request we've asked for each year. This year's our it shows up in our request for budget appropriation, the reduction based on the interest we earn and expect to earn.
But with regard to Senator Josephson's question, he asked if the legislature was in essence losing control, is my understanding, of AHFC in terms of the specific funds. They're revolving now, and we would not be able to reappropriate them or use of anything of that sort. If you had a continued growth in your program, then you would require additional funds over and above the $240 million that you have. And that's why you've been coming to the legislature each year, is that it isn't sufficient for revolving purpose to take care of your total program, and so you keep asking for the state for additional funds. Is that correct?
That is correct, Senator, but this does not create a permanent revolving fund. That is one of the unanswered questions, and was not addressed by this legislation because it is not important at this time. When the funds are used to subsidize bonds, they will be tied up by a security for the bonds for a number of years, generally 8 to 10 years. At that time, when the bonds are paid, they will revert to the corporation and would reasonably come into question again in the same way these funds have come into question. This legislation does not address the reversion of those funds to the corporation at the time of the maturity of those bonds, so that they would be back again. And I believe under the attack or the direction we've taken thus far, they would have to be reappropriated to the corporation at the time of the maturity of the bonds again.
I have two.
Senator Cardullo?
When did your unconstitutional and illegal actions come to your attention in regard to this fund?
Senator, the AG's office has not handed down an opinion that these actions are unconstitutional. Thank you. They came to our attention that they would have to be addressed approximately 3 weeks ago. There have been questions, unanswered questions. The AG's office did additional work, and I guess it would be correct to say that they raised enough questions that it was felt it had to be addressed.
How did you drift into this position of not being within the constitutional framework with your, I won't call it a slush fund, but with the fund that you've used for to build, to provide for loans beyond the appropriated amounts each year? How did it come that it did not get back in the general fund? I don't blame you. I'm just curious, what was the mechanism? Maybe we'll learn from that. Tell our state auditors to watch for it in the future.
The agency has what it's called what is called the SAM fund, which is the state appropriated mortgage fund, which is a fund in which appropriations are held until used for subsidy. Those appropriations were received by the agency each year in a lump at the beginning of the year, and since they were used over the period of the year, they earned income, which added to the balance of the SAM fund. Additionally, back in, I believe it was 1980, the agency sold some bonds on which there was a question of their tax-exempt status, and at that time the legislature appropriated substantial, I believe it was close to $200 million of existing mortgages as collateral for those bonds, should their tax-exempt status be revoked. Later, the legislature appropriated to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation those mortgages to be used as part of the SAM fund, which meant that they sat and earned interest and had principal payments until their use came about. I might say that So in those ways, money was accumulated in the SAM fund over and above the appropriations. We have been told by the Department of Revenue that they are no longer going to appropriate to us, or I guess you'd say pay to us, not appropriate, their SAM funds or our SAM funds for subsidy prior to our need of them, so that this earnings in the SAM fund, once the present SAM fund is depleted, which is will happen during 1984, will not occur again.
And the mechanism for earnings to go into where? The general fund back to revenue? What is the mechanism now?
There is no mechanism for funds to go back to revenue now, Senator.
One further question first. Who is your legal counsel during all this period of time? Didn't pay attention to the constitutional directive. Every one of us has known it all, but we can't pull every detail of every bureaucracy's activities. Who was your advisor? Who is your legal counsel who should know the state constitution?
I believe our legal counsel is the AG's office, Senator.
It is now, that's obvious, but I don't think it was. I think you may well be playing a game between some of these answers.
I'm not sure that the agency had a legal counsel as such. Wolforth and Flint was the bond counsel for the firm. I don't know that we retained anyone as legal counsel.
The only purpose of this exercise is that we don't drift into these areas again. We need our state audit committee to continuously function, make certain that these things don't happen with other agencies, even though probably what you did with the funds was not inappropriate from a constitutional point of view. I finally have one other question, and that's the one that has bothered me for years. And it was a testimony of yourself a few moments ago that it'll be years before this program gets into balance. Now, we've been subsidizing bankers, and we've been subsidizing homeowners, and we've been subsidizing builders and building suppliers and creating the economy out there, but it's been a subsidizing one. Do you have developed within this mechanism a system to get off the dole at some time? This is one of the largest subsidies in the state that no one wants to pay attention to or talk about.
Senator, we do not have a clear plan to get off the dole. One of the steps taken by the agency in the form of getting approval by the voters for the Veterans GO program last year is a step towards reducing the subsidy, since it takes substantially less money to subsidize tax-exempt bonds because of their rate than it does taxable bonds. There is no plan at this moment to eliminate the taxable bond program, which takes care of approximately 45% to 50% of our market. Although, as you yourself said, there we are building a fund which will revolve eventually and eliminate that need.
Senator Fisher?
To what extent do you have information on who the recipients of these subsidies are? How many people, where they are, what income ranges, and so on? What kind of information do you have?
Senator, I can tell you, if you wish, the average income of our mortgage borrower. I cannot tell you how much subsidy they receive. I can tell you how many loans they have, that kind of information.
I don't need this. Can you provide that information?
Yes, sir.
I need it very quickly, please. Yeah, another question, Mr. Chairman. What is happening with competitive interest rates through Fannie Mae and other programs? Relative to HFC?
Senator, both rates have dropped. Our rates have dropped our borrowing rates from about 18% to 12.5%. Fannie Mae rates have dropped probably about the same amount. Actually, today on loans over $90,000, the funds you borrow are as cheap or cheaper at Fannie Mae than they are from Alaska Housing. The difference between Fannie Mae and our rates now is the subsidy amount on the first $90,000.
Can you provide me that information in writing, please?
Yes, sir, we'll provide you today.
Thank you.
Senator Josephson?
Yeah. Mr. Lynch, I'm following Senator Ferguson on this, but there are two bills on our desk, the Senate Bill 239 and the CSHB 336. Okay. What's the difference?
Senator, it was the intention of the governor's office to introduce bills on both sides of the House and introduce the same bill.
Okay.
Inadvertently, initially, you got the wrong draft for Senate Bill number 239. You should have had the same bill as the House. The House then introduced a substitute which made one change, and that was it extended the period from July 1st, 1983 through July 30th, 1984.
Is the passage of this legislation necessary to comply with loan or financing covenants you've made in the bond sales?
It is not necessary to comply with financing covenants on prior bond sales, no, sir.
But it is necessary in terms of the future ones that,
yes,
that we've scheduled. And do those involve different, the prospective one that's planned involves different covenants with the bondholders than the
no,
ones
sir.
In the past?
Well, exactly the same covenants that we've made in the past.
Why is it necessary to do this for that sale but not for the ones you've already held?
If we had known about it prior to the others, we would have had to do it then also.
I mean, the problem didn't come.
It's a question of disclosure, Senator.
Okay, and I appreciate, Senator Sackett, your following up my concern, and I think you did it with much more ability than I could have, but I want to pursue it in my own, if I might, at this time. To articulate my concern a little differently, Mr. Lynch, some of us feel, and I'm one of them, that we want to look consciously, and I think Senator Fisher's questions go to this, as to who's benefiting and Senator Petula's, how large a subsidy this is, so that we can make some evaluations or judgments about this program versus other programs in an environment in which different programs compete for a limited amount of funds. And the concern that I had was not see this go on outside legislative control. And I'm not clear when, for example, in 1984, when it will be that we will be able to take a conscientious look and make judgments as to how large we want this program to be, or how we can recapture earnings that might go to other housing programs, for example.
Senator, this bill is not purposely not revolving fund language, which I think is your concern. We will have to come back to you each year and ask for an appropriation of additional principal payments received or interest earned. We obviously will have to come back to you each year for additional subsidy requests if there are any. And I believe when our bonds start to mature and there is a return of the subsidy funds to us, we will have to come back and ask you to reappropriate those funds at that time.
Okay, take your statement, what you just said, and take the wording in section 1 and 2, and tell me why it's not a reappropriation of, it's not a revolving fund. All mortgage loan interest, that's separate, and principal repayments. Isn't that the loan repayment back to the state? The loan repayments can be used for reappropriation and as a revolving loan within your system?
Yes, Senator, but these are the loans that were appropriated to us as loans, not the loans we made.
These are not the loans that you've made to individuals?
No, primarily they are loans that you appropriated to us as part of your annual appropriations. You appropriated as loans rather than cash several times.
Loan interest and principal repayments, okay.
Chairman.
Senator Fisher?
Could not Section 2 be handled through the regular operating budget appropriation bill? It wouldn't be more appropriate to run Section 2 through the operating budget, showing expenditures as well as program receipts.
Senator, I'm not sure I understand the question.
I think I'm really addressing this more to the chairman than to my colleague.
It could be. My understanding was that while he had the bill before you right now, was to be able to do it through 1984 all at one time.
But in the future, it would be appropriate because other funds are run through the budget showing expenditures and
right.
Program receipts and balance. Which would, Mr. Chairman, which would take care of Senator Joseph's concern that we're just putting this outside of legislative control in a way.
Go ahead, Senator.
One quick question. I well remember, because I chaired the committee that got us trapped here in Roy, it may have been a good result socially, but we put in $500,000, and the 50-to-1 guaranteed instead of Housing Home Finance got $25 million about a decade ago. How much subsidy now have we provided? We didn't start out to subsidize, but there were changes to the Alma Act and so on. How much subsidy have we provided approximately, do you know, top of your head, to housing?
Approximately $1 billion.
$1 billion.
Yes, sir.
We're going to end up with a portfolio that's going to be, today, we've been subsidized essentially by $1 billion.
Yes, sir.
It always interests me when you subsidize your suburbia by $1 billion. They keep wondering, and the Anchorage Times is one of those assists in this, they keep wondering where your money went. Here's $1 billion of the funds that came from non-renewable resources. I just think that ought to be a matter of record. Thank you very much.
Any further questions?
Let me explore your question, Senator Sack. And in reading section 1 and 2, I don't see anything that precludes you from using the receipts from your loans. Somebody can enlighten me here.
Senator, the loans we make with the funds we receive are pledged to bonds, and the payments, principal and interest from those mortgages are pledged to the bonds, so that there's no way we could use those. They're covered by the bond indentures.
And what is occurring on the repayment of those loans that you have outstanding right now? What happens with the portions, the principal portions?
The ones securing the bond, Senator?
Yes.
They go to a trustee, Bank of America, who in turn makes semi-annual interest and principal payments, and if we get accelerated payments, they accelerate the payment of the bond.
So they go directly to the
yes,
bond?
Yes, sir. All, and in addition, any funds earned on these payments when they sit waiting for those semi-annual payment periods, those earnings are also used to retire bonds or pay interest.
Are there any exceptions to what you stated?
None that I'm aware of, no, Senator. All income off of bonds, off of mortgages pledged to bonds, are pledged to the bondholders.
I guess what I'm asking is, do they always go to the bondholder, whether they're pledged or not?
Yes, the only, I guess, I don't know if you would call this an exception, but there is one program called the Insured Mortgage Program, which ran for several years, which does allow us to relend the funds. Or more importantly, we've used it lately for our Tries and Fours program. We in essence, pledge new mortgages, use the cash to make new mortgages under the Tries and Fours program, which is not something we can cover under our single family and duplex bonds.
What dollar figure are we talking in this per year?
We're getting the insured housing program, approximately $50 million per year, $60 to $80 million per year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions?
Welcome to the American version in the 20th century of the capitalist system, the free enterprise system.
Desire of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to hold this bill for a while to further study it and make some recommendations to the committee.
Without objection?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. However long it takes to study. Senate Bill 99. Senate Bill 99 was assigned to Senator Fakes. It was an appropriation to the Alaska Railroad Transfer Report, the Transfer Advisory Commission. They do not need the bill. However, I wanted to be able to use the bill for a vehicle for a specific problem that we're having, which I don't have any backup information on.
Yes.
How is that? Here it is. Does everybody have a work draft in their packet? As you'll recall in the newspapers a couple of weeks ago, there was a story about the fact that vendors to the state could not get paid from the Office of Elections, Lieutenant Governor's office, due to the fact that they'd run out of funds. And in checking this, two things came to light. One, they could and have since used funds from the contingency fund of the governor's office to pay off immediate problems, but they're going to have a continuing one, and so I thought I'd better bring this up and to your attention. Basically, the sum of $274,000 needs to be appropriated, and there's basically two reasons for that. There's bond obligations of $109,600, primarily from the fact that according to this administration, the last administration was did not come up with actual dollar amounts when they came before the legislature, and they had forgotten certain things. In your attachment A, does everybody have that? I better get some copies. Does everybody have copies of these, Matt?
No.
Attachment A and attachment B? Yes, there. Put your name, no.
Thank you.
So you have a listing there of the debts that they have outstanding. I asked the question whether or not the legislature had given them less funds than they had requested. The answer was no. We had given them every dollar that they requested, just that they had not requested the correct amount. And in attachment B, you have the explanation from Mary Lou Miners to Lieutenant Governor Stephen Galfine.
This item also appears in SB-158.
Right, but we still have it, and people are running out of money, so I need to move it. Can you even get that out by
here?
Max, could you explain the other thing that they needed? The check numbers, the other additional money. They want to do something else besides just pay the bill.
Later this year, the city of Lake is attempting to bring on the new Dallas County system, and some of the municipalities. They're going to use the elections later this year for sort of a test run on the new program. And those are the money they're asking for in the coming year, for FY84. So they know that they're going to run short, try and bring this thing online for the 1984 elections, and that's the rest of their new.
Thank you. Senator Josephson?
Are we paying costs that would otherwise be borne by the local government?
No.
No. Starting on the next to the last paragraph, on the second page of that memorandum, is an explanation of what the little automatic computers are doing. They wanted to do the test on any municipal election so that they'll be prepared to face you anyway for the general election coming up.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bennett?
Appropriate, I would move for the adoption of the committee substitute Senate Bill 99, Finance.
Is there an objection? Without objection, so ordered.
No further discussion on the bill. I would move it still be dispatched from committee with individual recommendations.
Is there an objection? Without objection? Senator 215, that year is done.
Please substitute for Senate Bill 215. I think we have people here to enlighten us on the wisdom of this particular bill. Come forward, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Tellinghast. I'm a local juvenile attorney who's been retained by the Senate Ad Hoc Committee on Residency. With me at the table is Paul Escavera, who is a research assistant who's been working with me on the bill. Currently, to get a longevity bonus, you have to satisfy three criteria. You have to be 65 years old, you have to have 25 years of continuous residency in the state, and you had to have resided in the state on or before the date of statehood. Now, shortly after the state lost the Zobel case, the state was sued over those durational residency requirements in Juneau by a fellow by the name of Rodney Vest. Mr. Vest had the misfortune of arriving in Alaska and commencing his residency some 3 months after statehood. The Attorney General's Office and the Alaska Legislative Council looked at the lawsuit and the Zobel decision and decided that the existing longevity bonus program could not be defended in good faith. And we entered into a settlement with Mr. Vest, which basically stayed the case for a year through the close of this legislative session. In return for that, the Alaska Legislative Council promised to use its best efforts to secure the passage of legislation which would treat all elderly Alaskans with 1 year's residency equally as of July 1, 1982. If legislation was not enacted which met that standard this session, the lawsuit would continue with the likely result that the program would be terminated. When the program was enacted in 1972, there was included in the bill a non-severability clause, which the effect of which is basically that if the durational residency requirement of the act is struck down, the whole act is stopped, and some 9,400 people who currently get the longevity bonus will not get their $250 a month. When I was retained by the ad hoc residency committee, my marching orders were quite plain, and that was to develop a series of alternatives which would result in the continuation of a viable longevity bonus program. And I think those orders were given for several reasons. Senator Ray was one of the original sponsors of the 1972 law creating a longevity bonus program. He made it quite plain that the original intent of the bill was to establish more or less a permanent program that, albeit a subclass of Alaska's elderly, those currently getting the bonus were an important human resource to the state, and that it was very difficult financially for folks to be able to retire here, and that the 250 months which these people receive as a longevity bonus program provides some compensation for those increased costs and does create some incentive for these people to remain. Additionally, in some parts of the state, oddly enough, the longevity bonus, although not a large amount, is the major source of income for the elderly. This is particularly true in rural Alaska. In rural Alaska, you have many people who do not have a large wage earning history and as a result are ineligible for Social Security. and therefore rely on the Alaska Longevity Bonus. According to a 1983 report prepared by the Older Alaskans Commission, in Southwest Alaska, 41% of the elderly rely on the Longevity Bonus as their major source of income, and an amazing 66% of those living in Northwest Alaska rely on the ALB as their major source of income. Additionally, the reports that we looked at convinced us that the Longevity Bonus program has had a significant effect in keeping people off various public assistance programs when they're available, such as food stamps. And finally, that even by expanding the program to all one-year residents, we were not creating a newcomers program. There are very few newcomer elderly in the state. The vast majority of those who are not now receiving the Longevity Bonus have been here in excess of 10 years. Nor did we think that a modest $250 a month would attract a lot of people to leave Sun City or Coral Gables and come and flip on the streets in front of the Baranoff Hotel in the winter. We looked at 10 options, and one in particular I want to discuss at the close of my testimony because it's been suggested by the Sheffield administration, which has been critical of the Senate committee's bill. But first things first, we'll start with ours. Under CSSB 215, 12.5% of permanent fund earnings would be credited annually to an Alaska Longevity Bonus account. That account would be available for appropriation by the legislature through the Alaska Longevity Bonus Fund and would constitute the funding source for the Longevity Bonus. The bonus itself would be paid to all elderly Alaskans over the age of 65 who have lived here 1 year. We picked the 12.5% figure for a couple of reasons. First, for FY 1984, that is very close to the $41 to $42 million that would be needed to provide a $250 a month bonus to all elderly Alaskans. Also, as we begin to discuss projections for elderly population in the future with various insurance companies and actuaries, we found that as the years go by, 12.5% of permanent fund earnings will be in excess of that which is necessary to fund the current year's bonus. As a result, you will start building a savings account of some magnitude, which will help make the program partially self-sustaining, which is important for two reasons. First, beginning about the year 2010, all of us 30 to 35-year-olds who were born during the baby boom are going to come of age, resulting in a substantial swell in the percentage of the population, which is elderly. Second, there will, although none of us like to admit it, come a time when permanent fund earnings may be necessary for general government operation expenses. And to the extent that by the time that comes, you have a self-sustaining program that's no longer a drain on permanent fund earnings, you've provided for that problem. Let me go, if I could, to our financial chart and show you what various people think will happen. And you will find some rather remarkable differences in what people think.
John, you also talked about a self-sustaining program that we've done. How did that come about?
To the extent that 12.5% of permanent fund earnings is in excess of current needs to fund managers program, the excess is placed in a savings account, which over the years will reach a size which will make the program at least partially self-sustaining. Obviously, as recent experience with the Social Security system makes clear, to an extent you're getting, we have a hedge against getting wrong, and I'll explain that in a minute. We're talking about taking 25% of this figure in millions is the amount of permanent fund earnings that is currently distributed as dividends, which is 50% of total earnings. So 25% of this figure, which in 1984 would be approximately $42 million. As I go through the projections for FY 84, 85, and the year 2000, I better introduce our cast of characters. We have three. We have the people who we use to project the
have their actuaries, that would be traveling actuaries, project the number of elderly who would be residing in Alaska through the year 2050. They started with existing data on how many elderly there are now and basically extrapolated into the future. And they relied mainly on projections of the Social Security Commission and their recent late 1992 report as part of the Social Security bailout program. The other fellow, Mercer & Company, is a consultant which the Sheffield administration uses for various social program purposes. And how do I say this delicately? Mercer did not use the assumptions which Aetna and Travelers did. He used assumptions which showed that there would be a substantially larger number of elderly in future years than Aetna and Travelers would be the case. The residency committee relied on Aetna and Travelers for two reasons. First of all, they had precedent for their assumptions, which is a Social Security Commission assumption, and assumptions which are generally used by actuaries in commercial insurance. Mercer had none. Mercer's feeling that there was more elderly was more of a set feeling. Second, Mercer was working for the Department of Administration, which doesn't like this bill. And they don't like it because they have a welfare alternative, which I'll get to in a minute. As an attorney, you're always sensitive to the bias of the witness, and you're sensitive to the issue of the witness. For 1984, 25% of the figure I chose for 12.5% of total revenue will equal $46.2 million. The fund bonus is $41.1 million.